Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I am interviewing somebody who is a bit of a legend in the UK magic community. This is somebody who's a creator and innovator. He's created effects that are used by magicians literally all over the world. I've seen him lecture. He's got an incredible lecture. But on top of all of that, he is somebody who is a really good business person in magic. You very rarely see that. You rarely see people who, magicians aren't great business people. This is somebody who gets the business side of magic and is also a great performer as well. He's a very rare breed. I'm so excited to have him on the channel. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Sean Goodman. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm great. I'm thinking, great, who the hell is he talking about? I'm loving it.
Sure. I mean, first time you and I chatted many, many years ago was when we were talking about BNI, because obviously you were BNI for years. I don't know if you still are, but you're a member for BNI for years. And all I heard, when I heard that you're a member of BNI, I was like, okay, this is obviously somebody who gets the business side of things, because you're not going to spend money on a BNI membership without understanding the value of branding and marketing and putting yourself out there. And, you know, just you telling me that all those years ago spoke volumes to me about the type of person you are. So, you know, I mean, it's we can get into this during the interview, but you know,
happy to chat about that.
It'd be really good. But, you know, I mean you're very busy, which is even busier since lockdown obviously has ended, as we all are. And I'm so glad that you found time to do this, because although we know each other, I don't know the ins and outs, and I'm going to find this interview. Normally when I interview people, I kind of know most of it, and I'm kind of going blind with a lot of this. I know you've got a reputation, we've chatted a few times, I know your effects, but I don't really know you. So this is going to be really fun for me. And we're going to start, I always start every interview, Sean, which is the origin story. Very quickly, what got you into magic, my friend? How old were you? How did that all come to be?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started, there was years ago, because I'm a little bit older than you, only a little bit. And there was a TV program called The Magician that starred a guy called Bill Bixby.
I remember seeing reruns later on, The Incredible Hulk, right?
Yeah, so he became more famous as being The Incredible Hulk, not the green, muscly one, but the David Banner character. But he was a keen amateur magician. And basically this program, The Magician, was him in this role as the magician. And he was using his magical skills to help solve crimes. And I was a 10-year-old boy at the time watching this. And at the time, of course, there wasn't YouTube or anything like that. There was just stuff on the TV. And I was thinking, I was watching this guy and he was suave, sophisticated. He was rich. He had these flashy cars. He had the women falling at his feet. So 10-year-old boy, obviously, I thought this magician light looks all right. So, and that was it. And so I got hooked in. And at the time, I don't know if they still do them now, fan clubs. So I wanted to join Bill Bixby's fan club. I didn't know how to do this. And I went on holiday to Jersey and I met another lad called Vaughan. So it was like Vaughan and Sean. We both loved The Magician, and he said, I can give you the details of Bill Bixby's fan club. So I went, great. He said, or I can teach you a magic trick. I never got Bill Bixby's fan club details, but he taught me the 3-pile 21 card trick, and that was it. I was hooked, and off I went, and I started performing this thing over and over and over again to whoever had a pulse. And I think that's actually something that's lived with me for a long time, because when I get an effect, you do it, as you well know, Craig, you do it over and over and over again until it looks as though you're doing it just naturally and things don't happen, but people don't see the hours of work that go behind the scenes. So that's how I got started.
Wow. So you're 10 years old. You've learned the 21 card trick. You're showing it to everybody. Did you carry on through school? Did it become an obsession like a lot of people? Because I've spoken to a lot of people I interview and they go, oh, my interest dropped off and then came back later on. Or were you just full on?
No, I was a sad one. Yeah. So again, we didn't have YouTube. So the only thing we had were libraries. So I went into libraries and I got books out on magic. And this is why I think I prefer as a learning medium myself. I prefer books based on obviously that I used to read lots of books when I was younger and I still do. And I love the book thing because videos are great as well because you've got visual, but I see a lot of magicians and they almost like become a stereotype of the person performing, whereas a book just gives you the bare bones and then you add your flavor to it. So I just went along and I got loads and loads of books out, and that's how I started learning magic. And most of my stuff at the beginning was pretty much card trick after card trick after card trick after card trick, which sounds a bit familiar to many magicians out there. Nothing wrong with that, but that's how I got started. And so, yeah, I was constant throughout school. And I think one of the things that magic is really good for is it develops people's presentation skills and it develops their self-confidence. So for me, that was a real big thing because as a 10-year-old boy, I was quite shy and introvert. And this enabled me to sort of come out of myself a little bit, which was great. So yeah, full on. I think my mum and dad hoped that I'd come out of this thing, but no, it didn't. It carried on.
That's funny. So was the desire to always go professional, or was it just a case of this is a really fun hobby that I enjoy doing, and there wasn't any thoughts about becoming a professional magician? Or you know, where was your process?
Yeah, so I was about 16 and I was learning all of these tricks, and I forget the name of the book, but I was learning card sleights and I was doing classic passes and all sorts of cardy stuff, but I wasn't really putting it together in a sort of structured way, which as a professional worker, as you well know, that is what you do. You routine stuff, you put stuff together. And then I met a guy called Alan Rentcombe. And Alan Rentcombe is now based in America. He's got a proper job. So he's like a CEO for a big electronics company, et cetera, et cetera. And we communicate via Messenger or whatever. And he was a semi-professional magician. Okay. I'd never met another magician. And suddenly he started showing me things. I thought, oh my God, this is proper stuff. Because he was presenting it properly. And I went along and I watched him at a place called Spencer's Wine Bar, which is over in Essex. I don't think it's around now, but I went along and I watched him work. And I thought, oh my God, this is what I want to do. This is just awesome. And I was watching how he was managing the crowd, interacting with them. And my level just went through. I was like, so excited. And that was it. And so I met him and it just went to a whole new level.
And is it that point that you kind of realized, actually, I could make a living doing this? This is something I could do.
Well, I didn't realize that people could actually earn money being a magician. That was the I just thought it was for these, you know, Paul Daniels and whatever on the telly. I just thought, well, it's all right for them, but I didn't realize there were working magicians out there. No idea. And he was doing it working alongside a job. And so I just thought, okay, that's kind of cool thing to do. It was only later on that I realized that you could actually do it as a living.
Okay. So when you finished school at the age of 16, did you go into higher education or did you get a job? Or what kind of happened then? And did magic carry on? Because obviously, when you start getting into full-time employment or you start getting into university, whatever it is, it can sometimes kind of things that you've loved your whole life can drop away a little bit, can't they?
Yeah, no, that didn't happen. Sorry about that. But my mum and dad idolized my brother, and rightly so, because he's better looking and clever than me, which I get. But my brother went along. So he went off and got qualified and did electrical engineering, got a great job, et cetera, et cetera. And so I wanted to follow my brother's footsteps. And luckily for me, believe it or not, I found maths, science, that sort of thing, a bit geeky, I guess. I found that really quite easy at school. So I went off to college. I got offered a student apprenticeship with the electricity board, as it used to be called, which meant that they paid for you to work for them and they paid for you to go to university. So I went to City University in London. I got myself a upper second class honours degree, get me, in electrical electronic engineering, and went down this corporate route of in the electricity board and got quickly promoted through. But it wasn't scratching the itch. I was earning good income coming in, I wasn't following my dream. That stage, you know, I'm getting houses, relationships, et cetera, et cetera, and stuff's happening. And the financial burden is there, which means actually chucking that away and going into doing something risky. My mum and dad hated that idea, but I was toying with this idea. I went through and I was got all promoted through, but I just looked at my boss and what he was doing. And I just went, do I really want to be doing that? Mm. No. And I've got two beautiful daughters and I've always said to them the same, don't follow the money, follow your passion, follow your dream. And if you're good enough, the money will follow. And if you've got strong self-belief, it will happen. That's my believing. And you know, you are exactly the same. So you follow your passion and you go with it. So I was pretty much the same. And I went from there and I went into, believe it or not, teaching or lecturing at a technical college. And at that stage, I started doing magic alongside the job.
So up until then, you were the quintessential hobbyist, practicing, learning, you know, like just getting good at the craft, but you weren't actually going out doing gigs. I find that really interesting, Sean, because there's so many people that come into magic these days that rush into performing. It's like they've learned five card tricks and they're like, right, okay, I'm going to go and do a gig now.
No.
It's interesting to see you, I mean, we're talking, you know, you got into magic at 10, you know, teach it. When did the teaching thing start? How old were you there?
I was about 27.
So that's 17 years.
27. And I then turned full time at 30.
Okay. Really interesting that you didn't do any gigs until you became a, you know, a lecturer. That's really interesting. When you became a lecturer, did you kind of have on your radar, I'm going to go full time, and that's why you started doing gigs? Or was it a case of you have the time to do gigs and like that ultimately took over? How did that 3-year period pan out of you being a lecturer? Because you say 27, okay, you became a lecturer, 30 year, at the age of 30, you became a full-time pro. So what happened in that 3-year period?
Right. So this is random. So
okay, I like random.
I was reading the local rag and I saw a advert that said, do you want to be a magician?
Are you joking?
No. So I thought, what's this going? What's this? And it was a course at my local college being run by a guy called Sid Slavny. And I thought, okay, let's check this out. And Sid Slavny was basically a children's entertainer. And I went along and it was a six-week course. And I sat there watching Sid, and he was a great kids entertainer. He really was. He actually went on Blind Date as well. And he was a nightmare on it, quite honestly, but lovely man. Sadly, obviously he's departed now, but he must have been then in his 70s when he was doing this course. It was just before, so I did his 70th party for him. So he was just before, he was late 60s. So anyway, I went along to this course and I sat there watching him all his interaction. And I actually thought, and this isn't meant big-headedly, I just thought, if this guy can earn a living doing magic, so can I. And that was it. And I just thought, wow, this is an opportunity. And so I learned loads of kid stuff from Sid. And I developed an act, and I went out, and I was Sean Squiggle.
Okay.
There you go. And so
I did not know you're a kids entertainer at any point.
Well, that, yeah. So it brought in the bacon. It brought in the bacon. I mean, at that time, it's a bit different now for children's entertainers, but I was doing at a week, I was doing six shows over a weekend. I was absolutely heaving out, loads of stuff coming in. And it was great. So what happened during that 3-year period as a lecturer, I developed the magic as a sideline, developed it alongside the business. And this is a great tip for anyone looking to go full time. And what I did is I lived off my magic earnings and I banked the job money. And once I did that for 6 months, then you left the job. And it wasn't the money back up, it was in your head. Because most people, the thing that stops them is the thing between their ears. They don't believe that they can do it and earn a living. And I'd actually proved it over 6 months, you can do this. And that was it. And then away you went.
Killer.
So the kids' magic thing was great and it brought in the bacon, but I still had that itch because kids' magic is great, but that isn't my passion.
But did you go full-time as a kids entertainer primarily? If you were doing six shows a weekend doing a kids entertainer, you probably didn't have much time to do close-up. So you went full-time predominantly as a kids entertainer. That's really interesting, which is great. So the money was up there, like you say, brought in the bacon, but you've got that desire to want to do more, to be a serious magician, whatever that may be. How did you then transition from kids entertainment to close-up and stage or whatever it is?
So I think a little bit like most magicians, when you're starting off, you don't really know what your best thing is, and so you buy a load of rubbish, don't you? You buy that, buy this, buy the other, and as you well know, the magic market is mainly aimed at the hobbyist end rather than the pro workers, and so I'm buying loads of stuff. And then you're trying it and, oh, well, that doesn't really fit with me. But you don't know really who you are. So I was buying lots of stuff, wondering, well, okay, what's the best fit? I even got doves. I thought, would I be a dove magician?
You were the dove magician, Sean, to be honest.
Yeah, it didn't work very long. So bought the Java doves very quickly. They went. Then I did an illusion show. So I bought CubeZag and some other things, and I bought a van, tried that, glamorous assistant. It was all right, but that wasn't my thing either. I tried to be a comedy magician. No, that isn't my bag. Trying like the going around the holiday camp type thing, and that wasn't my bag. And it just takes time.
You had that income from the kids magic while you were trying to figure all this
out.
Yeah.
And, but I was at the kids thing. I then got booked into doing weddings, and this is where the hook for weddings. So I do typically between 50 and 60 weddings a year. I do, they don't want me there. I just turn up. It's great. I just bake cash. I like cake. So I do a lot of weddings, and the wedding bug came from as a kids entertainer. I got booked to come along to entertain the kids at weddings. But I then went, well, hold on, I can do some stuff around the tables. And I went around the tables and suddenly, this is where I want to be. This is it. And so that was where the inkling came in. Now, at that stage, I'd met a guy. He's a bit of a strange character, actually, a bloke called Wayne Fox. Don't know if you know
him. Oh,
Wayne.
Well, Foxy, yeah. Everybody knows him, don't they?
Yeah, Wayne's a really good buddy of mine, and we met at a place.
Wayne is so creative, such an exceptional magician. Yeah, really.
Yeah, he's great. He's a really good friend of mine, and I've known him 30 odd years. And we first met at a place called the Fez Club, and he was earning a living just doing close-up magic. And again, that was a seed. So I thought, well, hold on, someone can actually earn a living doing this magic stuff, but not doing kids stuff. And it was then trying to wean yourself off of doing the kids magic, which was easy money, to then focus on doing what you actually loved.
So how did you wean yourself off it? Because that's a question that comes up on this channel an awful lot, because it's very easy to just, you know, like, take the kids gigs, because when you first start marketing yourself as a close-up magician, you might have a day killer. You might have a wedding that's a day killer, and you're kind of thinking, well, if I did my three kids shows, it would make me more money than doing this one wedding. Like, what do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. So I took, in the year 2000, I moved from, I was living in Hertfordshire. So at this time, I was doing, my core business was, I was doing lots of bar mitzvahs, loads of bar mitzvahs. Okay. So not that many, so the kids magic was still there, but it was, I was now getting into doing bar mitzvah work. And then I went on holiday to Norfolk, liked it. And I thought, well, actually, what I do, I could live anywhere. So without checking out,
I was just saying that's a really big scary thing to do, isn't it? Kind of like, because you have set yourself up a base and a client base in one particular area, and then to go, you know, I'm just going to move.
My personality trait is very much I'll go by the seat of my pants and follow things, which drove my parents around the bend, of course, but because they were very sort of, you know, just stick down the line. I don't mind taking risks. I've always been self-confident, I suppose. So yeah. I just thought, well, actually, I'll live there. That's fine. I can still commute. I can still do stuff. But yeah, I didn't do much market research. So I didn't find out that the going rate for magicians in Norfolk is a little bit different than when you're based in Cheshunt, just outside London. And and the population is slightly different as well. So I moved. And at that stage, I thought, hold on a minute, this is big decision time. What do you do? And I took the decision then, I'm getting rid of the kids' magic. I'm phasing it. I'm getting rid of it. And I just focused then on the close-up magic. Did I take a financial hit? Yeah.
But you probably had, like, some money built up.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, of course you do. Yeah. You put stuff aside. So that's there to bridge the gap. But nevertheless, it was a risk. But do you know what? I'm so pleased I did it.
And that's the interesting thing about risks, isn't it, Sean? Which is like, you know, and I've talked about risks on the channel before. Personally, I'd rather be the sort of person that looks back and goes, I'm glad I did it, rather than be the person that looks back and goes, what if? You know, has every risk I've taken paid off? No. Would I be where I am right now if I'd taken no risks and played it safe my entire career? Not a chance. And I think that's a really important lesson that you're talking about here, which is the importance of taking risks. If you're going to be entrepreneurial, and anybody who runs their own business, and being a self-employed magician is running your own business. And anybody who runs their own business and is entrepreneurial, you have to take risks from time to time if you want to get ahead, right?
Yeah, you either live with fear or you live with regret. Yeah. And I didn't want to live with regret. I didn't want to go to my last day thinking, what if I'd done X, Y, Z? I've given it a go. And do you know what? Like when COVID hit and all your business is gone, I had to go out and get a job. Ugh, sorry about that. You know, doing that thing that where you get paid regular income and you get holiday pay, you know, those sort of things.
Yeah.
I know. But I went and did that and it, oh my God. And it just made you realize how lucky you are doing something that you love with a passion and get paid for it, because you never work a day in your life then. And that's the position I'm in now. I do what I love, and it's just every day's a blessing.
Well, that's amazing. But let's talk about what I alluded to at the beginning, because we've got to the point where you've established yourself over in Norfolk. You've you've moved and you're doing the sort of magic that you love to do. You've dropped the kids shows. Everything's all good in the world. I alluded at the very beginning to the interview that you are a good business person. Let's talk about that briefly, because I've had a couple of people on the channel that are equally as good. Last week I had Sam Fitton, who's obviously an incredible wedding magician. And, you know, there's been a few others, but few and far between. So how important is it to focus on the business side of magic? Surely you can just become a magician and join an agency and then just sit back and wait for them to call you, right?
I guess you can, right? I've never worked for agents. So yeah, all my work is self-generated, always has been. So I suppose I come from the electricity board and everything. I come from a sales background anyway. So every job you do, you're a salesperson for yourself. And whenever you're working, that's a great opportunity. You're showcasing what you do. So first and foremost, you've got to make sure that what you do is good. And then at the jobs, you've got to obviously you've got to promote yourself, but not in a cheesy, over-the-top way. Actually, also on performance side, as you do as well, obviously, it's really important to take the focus off you. It's not about, look how clever I am. It's about how you make people feel. And if you do that, and if you make your customers, which are your spectators, feel special and important and involved, guess what? They like the experience, and guess what? They recommend you and stuff, and away you go. So recommendation is one of the strongest forms that I get. That's how I get most of my business, from word of mouth, that people have seen me or their friends have seen me, passed on the details, and away you go. And that's such a cool way of getting business, because ultimately you're not then fighting against other people for the same job. You're the only person they've been recommended. So that is such a strong way to get business, from word of mouth. So first and foremost, make sure your act is good, that you're not cheesy, in your face. Hi, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, hi. Oh my God, you know, make your persona suit your audience. So that might be good. That type of persona might be good in certain environments. So for example, nothing against this, a holiday camp type thing where you're Heidi High type thing, great, fine, happy days. Yeah. But that isn't me. So I'm doing corporate magic, working at Newmarket races, blah, 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 weddings, all of that stuff. So you've got to make sure that your act is appropriate for the audience you're dealing with. And then business cards, you know, silly things like business cards. Oh, great, hand them out. But again, in a nice way. So it's a great way. And making effects that are personalized to the client, because again, they like that and they talk about it. So making the experience a personal thing for the people you're performing at. So all of this is just looking at what you do when you're performing. This is not looking at anything you do outside of the performing area. So yeah. So when you're looking outside of the performing area, there's lots of different ways that you can market. And you are utilizing social media as a fantastic avenue to market. And congratulations on that. Absolutely blinding. Any form of social media marketing has got to be done on a consistent basis. And that's what you've done. You've done it on a consistent basis. You've got to keep on doing it. And again, it's a bit like when you're performing as a magician, you've got to, repetition is the mother of skill. You keep practicing. And the same with, so if you're going to use social media, just keep doing posts over and over again. So if you're looking at Facebook, Twitter, whatever you're going to, just regularly post, put stuff on there. If you get clips of you performing, do that as well. I think that's really, really important. I see a lot of people putting clips of themselves, and I think that's great. And it's so easy to do, so easy to do. You can, somebody will have a phone, they'll do a clip. Oh, do you mind if you just video that? Can you pass me the clip? Yeah, it's so, so simple to do. So all of this stuff is quite easy. It's quite easy. You can do that, but it takes discipline. Then there's other things that you can do. So you mentioned about a thing called BNI. You was in BNI as well, weren't you, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in networking for years. I started off in BNI. I ended up and still kind of with Brad Burton, just because his style kind of fits me more. I know that for networking, or Network Central as they're now known, and B&O, I don't really see eye to eye at the best of times, but I like both business models. But for me, the way I am, they're more relaxed and kind of more social than B&I, which is very, very... And the other problem with B&I is I got to a point, I did it for like 4 years and I love it. I'd recommend it to anyone. But I got to a point with B&I where you obviously have to go every single week. And I was doing a lot of gigs where I was traveling away in the week. And I was finding myself sending substitutes in every week. And it was like, well, this just isn't working for me because I'm not able to attend. I'm not able to get the most out of this than I would be if I was there every week. So that's when I kind of went for the Network Central for networking route, because they're more flexible and you can go anywhere around the UK. So,
okay. Yeah. I mean, if I just give my, so I was in B&I, I'm not in B&I anymore. So after lockdown happened, there was no point being in a referral marketing business where you can't get any work apart from doing online stuff. Yeah. And online stuff was fine. And I know people did it, but for me, that wasn't my bag. That wasn't it. I like the interaction. So, So I stopped being a member of B&I. It did actually make me reflect on that type of business model for marketing. So I then decided, and I've not rejoined B&I. Now, B&I is a for people that don't know, B&I is a referral marketing business. It's not networking. You've got a big network, but it's not networking as such. So there's other networking groups where people turn up. Why do they turn up? Because they want to sell their stuff. And most people make the mistake of going to networking meetings to sell. But nobody buys at a networking meeting. Nobody buys. Your key thing when you go to a networking meeting is to identify people that maybe you could work with and build a relationship with, so you can swap contacts between each other. That's the key thing. But I see that most people don't do that. Most people will go in there, they'll try to say, oh yeah, I'm a magician. Yeah, have you got a wedding coming up? Here you go. And the person on the other end doesn't really give a monkey's. They're not interested because they're trying to sell to you. So you've got to approach it in the right way, and you have got to be quite chilled and relaxed. B&I is more structured than most, and it's really great as a model, but you've got to work hard at it. And it's the same in any form of marketing. You've got to work hard. And with B&I, it's very, very suited for tradespeople's, accountants, things that people can get their head around quite easily. I understand what a plumber does. Ah, I need a plumber. But when you say you're a professional close-up magician, yeah, right. What's that all about? I don't quite get that. And a lot of people in B&I will give soft referrals to each other. That's into, oh, I need a bunch of flowers for my mum. I need this, that, and the other. But they can't say, oh, do you know what I really need is a top quality close-up magician. I've got a corporate event coming up. No, that doesn't happen. So it will cost you probably around about 1,200 quid, £1,300 to join. Then you've got, on top of that, your room costs. Then you've got your weekly expense. Then you've got to go out and do what they call one-to-ones. So when you budget all of that in, you're probably $3,000 to $4,000 investment. Do you get a return on that? Yes, you do, but you've got to work very hard for it.
Yeah.
So I personally think there's better ways for magicians to market themselves rather than via the B&I route.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked for me, worked for my business. It's why I did it for so long. But you got to remember when to get out. You know, it can be the sort of thing that can be a labor. I totally agree with you. But the whole concept of networking and building up the thing with networking, we're getting into business now, but the thing with networking, it doesn't have to be a networking event. You can be networking anywhere. You go down your friend's school You go down your kid's school, for example, and you're taking your kid to a football match or something, and you're standing next to a parent and you're chatting to that parent. That's networking. You know, you're building up relationships with people. And I think the most important thing I learned from networking is never judge a book by its cover. You never know who that person can connect you to. Just because the person you're speaking to is a cleaner, for example. Well, what office do they clean and what's their relationship with the person who cleans that office or who's their sister? And the biggest contract I ever got came from a cleaner. Like it's a contract I've had for years that's worth literally hundreds of thousands of pounds. And it came as a result of having a conversation with a cleaner who put me in touch with somebody. You know, you never know who you're speaking to. Don't judge a book by its cover.
Absolutely. So. And again, if anyone, for example, a very simple tip, here you go. If you're at a wedding, are there other wedding suppliers there? Yeah. So these guys do weddings. I do weddings. So doesn't it therefore make sense that you build a relationship with those guys? And maybe when they get a wedding referral or they get an inquiry, they go, oh, do you know what? Yeah, I was with this guy. He does mad blah, 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 blah. So yeah, you build relationships with people that have the same client base as you. So build relationships with other wedding suppliers, other people in the entertainment thing. Also, don't be afraid of building relationships with other magicians, because actually we're all in it together. And quite often, if I can't do stuff, I'll refer people on. And then guess what? That comes back. And so it's all about cultivating relationships. And it's such an easy thing to do. And it costs you nothing.
Bang, boom, exactly. So let me ask you another question. You've obviously nailed the business side of things. You're living in Norfolk. You're marketing yourself. You're fine for gigs. You're doing really well. You're living your ideal life. You know, you're doing your dream job, and everything's great. Where did creativity come into this? Because obviously, you lecture. You've created your own magic for magicians. How did that come about? Because, and this is a question that I'm always interested in hearing the answer to. And I've asked it to quite a few people on Talk Magic because it really kind of interests me. And the reason is, it's fair to say that you didn't have money problems when you started creating magic. You were in Norfolk, everything was going well. You know, you're marketing your business, you're not short of the odd gig or two, everything's fine. So why would you start creating magic? Surely it's like, okay, I'm going to create this. You keep it for yourself. Why would you give it to the community, especially somebody who doesn't really hang out that much with magicians? I know you do in your local area, but we talked off camera. You don't go to Blackpool. You don't really do that side of things. No. So how did you fall into the creativity side of the industry?
Yeah, that's down to my mate Wayne Fox. Oh, he's got a lot of answers for.
Oh, he's responsible for so much stuff, isn't he, folks?
I know. Yeah. So he's also responsible for getting me into the love of coin magic. And I know you love coin magic as well. So, yeah, Wayne's got a lot to answer for. So,
of course, he's so good at everything else. People don't think of Wayne as a coin guy, but good God, he is.
Oh, he's an amazing coin guy. And yeah, as I say, I mean, that's a totally different story how I sort of got involved in that. But, so Wayne, again, Wayne lives in sort of Waltham Cross area, so north-ish London, and I used to live in Cheshunt, so we used to hang around quite a bit, and he was working alongside a guy called Keelan Lazy, that does Quick Change.
Who now does the Quick Change Act, but at the time ran Magic Tricks.
That's it, yeah.
Wasn't he? Magictricks.co.
And Wayne was chatting to me about that he'd released some things with him and how he was really enjoying it. And I thought, oh, okay. And I create, as you do, I create quite a lot of stuff myself. And so I ran a couple of things. I met with Keelan and I went, oh, well, I've got this. What do you think? And he went, oh my God, that could be great. And that was genetics. And I'd been performing genetics for years, and how it first came about was when I was at school and I was trying to learn French words, le and la, and I'd le and la on the back of cards, and then I had the thing on, and that was where the idea of genetics came from, and I showed him on these rubbishy old cards that I'd made up. And he went, oh my God, that's great. That would be really, really good, blah, blah, blah. And I just thought, hey, how cool would that be to release a magic trick for a magician? And it was just, was I thinking about the money side? No. It was just the thought of, hey, wouldn't this be kind of cool to get your name on something? Because I don't, I'm not a big, you know, magician-y, magician's person. My audience are lay people. That's who pays my money. But I just thought, wouldn't it be kind of nice to just get your name out there? So, and I always did fancy doing lectures. I did fancy that because I, again, come from a teaching background and I like sharing things. Again, that ties in with BNI. I like giving stuff back. So that was where the drive from creating stuff was. The biggest creation for me personally, and my house is named after it as well, was Secret Savant, which is my holdout.
And that blew up and it's an incredible device.
Yeah, and that came out of necessity, to be honest. So I wanted to be able to perform it was a copper silver routine with coins. So and I wanted to be able to ditch and retrieve gimmicks and then ditch the gimmick. And there was nothing out there. There was nothing out there that I looked all over the place. There was plenty of coin droppers, but then there was nothing that you could put it back in and then pull it out and this, that, and the other. And so that was that creation was driven by a need, very much so. So genetically, I just developed it and someone went, well, that's kind of good. Away we went. But Secret Savant was from necessity, very much so. Some of the other things that I've created have been from, again, me just toying around with ideas, really. And then things just pop out.
And you've got a lot of the stuff that you create, especially these days, it's self-published, isn't it? You don't go through a production company like a Penguin or a Vanishing Ink. Or am I wrong?
Yeah, the last thing that I produced was an effect called Duo, which is the first coin routine that I've actually sort of published. I did that in conjunction with Mark at Saturn Magic. But all the other things really before that, I just did myself. And then, so I've got a relationship with Murphy's, so they send stuff over there, so they know me. So I then market it myself.
Brilliant. So it's not, I mean, you see some creators that just bring out stuff constantly all the time. Like you just see every week there's something seemingly coming out from them. That doesn't seem to be the case with you. Is it a case of creating is kind of a side thing, and if something comes up, then you'll look to market it, but it's not something that you actively sit down and make part of your business model, right?
No, it isn't. It's not part of my business plan. It's the fun aspect of it. Everything that I've released, to be fair, the same as yours, Craig, and I'm not blowing smoke up your backside. All your stuff is working material. It is. Yeah. So when something that you release comes on, I know as a working magician, it's going to be stuff that I would potentially use. So I'm just waiting for forecast. I was hoping to have that so I could go, da-da, here's forecast. So I've ordered that, okay, because it's working stuff. So everything that I produce is stuff that I do. So it means a lot to me. I'm passionate about it because it's part of my soul that goes into it. So I know there's people that produce stuff purely so that they can sell it, so people get it, and then they go, that goes in the drawer. Well, I don't want that. I want people, this is stuff that I perform. So if people are looking for solid workable material that has been worked, that's my stuff. And when I lecture, it's exactly the same. All the stuff that I show, it's working material. So when I lecture, they get like me in performance mode. It's just like me performing to real people, except magicians don't react like real people, do they? But I'm over that. I'm okay. Like it's fine. It's a passion of love creation.
I totally get that. I totally get that. So are you working on anything else at the moment in terms of creating magic? Have you got another thing that you're working on that's going to be coming out at some point in the next few months or year?
I've got a couple of ideas, but they're certainly not ready for putting out there yet. So, but again, it's you tinker around with things, but until it's right, and I've performed it lots and lots of times, I won't even think about it. So at the moment, I've got a few things in there, but watch this space.
That's really cool. Brilliant stuff. So I suppose one of the most... Are you there still? Yeah. Oh, you're there.
Yeah, cool. I hope so.
One of the most important... Yeah, I thought you disappeared there. The most important question I want to ask you, and this is a question I ask everybody on the channel that comes on for an interview, is... what's next, Sean? Like you say, you took a job during COVID, as most entertainers did, but now we're finding that with hopefully things, you know, gone away and everything getting back to normal, at least here in the UK, that work is coming in and it's getting busy and it's getting busy and it's getting busy, which is fantastic. You're back performing full time. What goals do you have moving forward, both in terms of a magician and a creator? So is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you want to achieve? We've already talked about how
you're
very successful in business.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm interested in what that is.
Yeah. So the first of all, I believe that if there's anyone that is watching this that is maybe thinking, well, it'd be quite nice to do magic as a full-time thing. One of the, if I just run through some of the benefits of it, and I'm talking to the converted with yourself, one of the biggest motivations for me were my children. I've got two daughters, Sabrina and Kelly, both incidentally, yeah, strangely named after Charlie's Angels in the original Charlie's Angels, which is a bit strange, but there you go. That wasn't intentional, but that's both of their names. So, but I wanted as a dad never to miss their school sports day. Now that might sound a bit wet and weak. I don't really care.
No, it doesn't at all.
I don't care because my children are and were my priority. And when I used to go to the school and look around, I was the only dad there.
Yeah.
And that wasn't an opportunity for me to hit on all the mums, not at all. But I was the only dad there. And that was one of the benefits of having your own business and being able to schedule your time. So things that are really important to you, you schedule them in. And with a job, many jobs don't let you do that. So that was absolutely priceless for me. So
on that subject, before you continue, I just want to point out, that's why I stopped doing wedding fairs. I stopped doing wedding fairs for that exact same reason, because I was working every Saturday. And on the Sundays that had off, I was running around all day doing a wedding fair. And I was like, I'm never seeing the kids. There's got to be a better way to get weddings where I'm not actually killing myself every Sunday. That's why I stopped doing wedding fairs.
Yeah, right there. It's about getting this work-life balance. And so so talking about work-life balance, one of my second passions is I love golf. Am I any good at it? I'm all right. I'm not brilliant. But I love it, and I love the banter, and I love the crack. And again, having that flexibility to be able to do something as a hobby without worrying about the time implications, oh, it's just gold. It's just beautiful. So, yeah, I can go off, and I'm playing golf with all these guys. They've all retired. They say, have you retired? No, I'm still working. But I work at different time things, but I'm lucky enough to, when I do work, I get well paid for it. And so you've got this work-life balance, and it's absolutely beautiful. Yeah, I don't get holiday pay, I don't get sick pay, but if you're smart, work your business, you put stuff aside and everything, and you cope with that, you deal with it. But yeah, one thing I would love to do, and I'm very jealous of you, Craig, in a very nice way, because I know you're off to America. And
yes,
one of the things that I would love to do is I'd love to do a lecture tour around America, and I'd love to perform at the Magic Castle. So there are a couple of things certainly on my bucket list, and I'd love to go out there with the wife. and stuff. One of the things that, again, so, I mean, you've lectured at the Magic Circle several times and everything. So for me, that was a big highlight when I went and lectured at the Magic Circle, 14th of November, 2016. Not as though it's a date engraved in me. But again, it's just little old me that I don't promote myself really to, I don't do that. But to do that, that was a real big thing. And that thought, oh, wouldn't that be great to do that over in America?
Yeah.
So if there's anyone listening from America,
yeah,
hook me up.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Why don't you speak to Sean Dunn of Penguin Magic? Do you know Sean?
No.
Okay, I'll hook you guys up.
Beautiful. There you go. Bit of networking.
Real-time example of networking. Yeah, I'll hook you guys up. That'll. I think Sean would love you. I know he would. Cool. I know this is going to come up in the comments, so I'm going to bring it up. What I mentioned earlier briefly that we spoke off camera, and you said you've never gone to the Blackpool Magic Convention. How come? And would you, you know, you've talked about wanting to lecture in America, and you got very excited about lecturing at the Magic Circle. If Blackpool rang you up and said, hey, Sean, I would like to book you for a lecture, would you do that?
Damn right. Oh, I'd be all over that. Oh, yeah. What does actually make me giggle a little bit, and is sometimes when you see people lecturing, and they're lecturing after doing about a year performing and now doing a lecture, and so I get, you know, when I lecture solid close-up working material from a working magician that's been professional for 28 years in the business. So if that's of interest to people, I think that's okay. I think people pick up stuff. But it does amaze me when I look at all these lecturers, and some of them, you know, my God, they look younger than whatever. And nothing against that, it's fine. But yeah. So yeah, if Blackpool rang me up, I'd love to. But then, Craig, I'm not a big name in the magic fraternity. So I get that as well. And that's my own doing, to be perfectly honest, because I don't go out there and push my name out really to magicians. I don't really do that.
Well, again, it's knowing about the fact that you've only got a certain amount of time in the day and you can't do everything. And you know, your business has always been performing to real people. And so if you spend time marketing yourself in an area that you don't really do much in, it's going to be detrimental to your business, I would imagine.
Yeah. So that's been the avenue. However, that might well change because, so that might change, but I haven't made that decision as yet.
Well, I'm sure if it ever will change, it would be hanging around with Wayne Fox. I mean, he's a guy who is incredibly well known in the... in the magic industry. Everybody knows who Wayne Fox is. He's doing pretty well.
He's brilliant. Just a little story. I first met Wayne and also Martin Cox. Do you know Martin?
I love Martin. I actually was with him, I think, at Blackpool. And we don't really know each other, but I'm a huge fan of his work, like a huge fan. And I think I blew him away a little bit because I just turned around to him and I said, hey, Martin, as far as I'm concerned, you're one of the best comedy magicians on stage I've ever seen. And you make me laugh my ass off every single time I watch you. I wish I was half as good as you are. Like, and I think he was a bit taken aback that I just said this out of the blue. We'd never really spoken before, but I mean it. I think Martin Cox is freaking hilarious.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. And he set up a magic club in Hertfordshire called the Fez Club. And so I was a fledgling, this new wannabe. This was just before I was turning pro, and I turned up there and I met all of these people. And my close up repertoire was card trick after card trick after card trick after card trick. And fair play to, you know, lots of entertainers do card trick after card trick after Nothing against that. But I think that magic for me is a little bit like a diet. I think it should be varied. And for me as a performer going out, so if you're a hobbyist and you love cards, not a problem. You're performing card tricks because you love it. Me as a professional going out there, earning my living doing magic, sometimes not everyone likes card tricks. And so being able to offer different things is great. And also what makes you different from every other magician? If you're doing the same old stuff, it might be a slightly different card trick, but in the spectator's eyes, it's a card trick. So try and do some things that are a little bit different. So anyway, so I went into the Fez Club, met Martin. Oh, it's on, Henry, what? Whoa, who the hell's this guy? And then I met this guy, and he didn't have sunglasses on his head then, and he had a little bit more hair, Wayne Fox. And he started doing coin magic for me. And I'd never seen this before. And I went into schoolboy, jaw drop, what the hell's just happened? Everyone else was doing card tricks and Wayne did coins. And I just thought, this is real magic. This is unbelievable stuff. And again, he did stuff. And one of my, again, favorite magicians of mine, Michael Amar, Michael Amar says the most convincing magic is when it's done slowly. It's not fast. It's not gymnastics. You're not trying to, you know, look how clever I am. Look how fast I can cut stuff and do. It was slow. And I just was blown away. And he then linked me into David Roth's expert coin technique book. I went on some workshops with David, very fortunate to meet David, God rest in peace, finest coin magician ever to live, in my humble opinion.
Without a doubt, absolutely.
Amazing guy. And that was where my love of coins came in. And I guess I've got to be careful when I perform, because if I had my way, I'd just do coin magic all the time. But I don't. I mix it all up, and I still do card stuff as well. So I'm not, but I do laugh at my lecture, because the lecture that I do at the moment, I do one card trick and everything else isn't cards. So so I warn them at the beginning, if you're looking for a load of card tricks, forget it. You're not going to get them.
Well, you know what? I was speaking to Eric Jones on this channel, who's obviously an incredible coin magician.
Yeah.
And him and I both had the discussion about coin magic. And the thing for me is that you have to establish credibility with your audience when you're doing close-up magic. And if you pull out a deck of cards and go, hey, pick a card, they're probably going to think I've seen this one before, even if they don't tell you. But you do something with a coin. You make a coin appear out of the air or do a flurry or something. Immediately, it's different to anything they've seen before. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just different. And also, generally, most coin routines are relatively short, sharp, punchy. So there's a lot of magic concentrated in a short period of time. So there's an opener in effect to establish your credibility. Coins are really cool, really good. Bang, 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 you can hit people. But you can also do it as a longer effect and you get full audience participation. And one of the strong, you know, anything that happens in the spectator's hands, that is an emotional response that they get. And people remember emotional stuff and they'll remember you. So anything that involves the spectator is just gold. And coin magic links in with that, as does card magic. You know, again, you need to do card magic, in my humble opinion, that involves people, gets them in, you know, the same sort of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Completely agree, 100%. So this has been a really good interview. This has been an exceptional interview.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that we've been able to get you on the channel, because you are a fountain of knowledge. Like you say, you know, you've been here, done that, bought the T-shirt more than once. And there's very few lecturers that go out there that have as much experience as you as a performer and as a business person, as a creator. And, you know, it's just been fantastic that you've got to come on the channel and share some golden nuggets. I really appreciate it, Sean. if people want to connect with you, like they want to buy some of your effects, and you know, you've released some amazing effects over the years. We've talked about Secret Savants. Genetics is still a modern classic, in my opinion. Lots and lots of other stuff. Do you have an online shop yourself that people can buy stuff from? Or is it a case of going to magic dealers? Let's pimp your stuff out, Sean. Where can people go to buy your bits and pieces?
Yeah, all right. I've got a little bit of magic. I'll sell you.
Now you're doing Wayne Fox impressions, it seems, as well.
Do a little bit of Wayne, Duncan and David. Wayne's, if you've ever met Wayne's dad, oh dear, he's all right, mate. All right, he's exactly like that. He's like a Del Boy. He's brilliant, great guy. I think you probably see on my background is www.simplymagic.co.uk. So that's my website, and on there's a bit for magicians, so people can sort of go on there and have a little look around, and there's some stuff on there. My latest thing, Duo, I don't sell that directly. That is purely from Saturn Magic. So, I don't do that one. So with respect to Saturn, so that's that. But some of my other bits and pieces are all on there as well. There is some unpublished routines that I did for the lecture, which are coin effects and everything. They're not on the website, but I need to put them on. So people can message me directly, which I have, because I pop things on social media and people ask me about them. And I let people know, you can have it for XYZ.
Brilliant. Okay. And if somebody wants to book you for a lecture, there's a guy in America that's looking for an amazing lecturer, and he's now found out that you are passionate about going and performing in America. Or Russ Brown. I know Russ Brown and Russ Stevens listen to most of the Talk Magic. So, you know, the guys that booked the Blackpool lecturers, they're listening to this right now. Sean, where do they go?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be amazing.
Where did it go? Where did it send you a
message? Just go straight onto my website. Drop me a message. You know, if they're daring enough, they can pick up the phone. Why don't people like talking now as well? Do you get that as well? When people, they send messages and stuff, and I much prefer to talk to people. So, if they want to give us a buzz, more than welcome. Can I share my phone number?
Hell yeah. I'll even put it at the bottom of the screen for you, mate.
Hell yeah. So my mobile number, which is the one that's the best one, is 07907-213-498. That's 07907-213-498. That's obviously UK. So add +44 if you're phoning from greater afield.
And just so you know, little known fact about Sean, he's an insomniac and stays up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning every morning. So if you feel the need to phone him at 3 o'clock in the morning, do so. He'll be awake.
I love it. He
wants a phone call at that time.
Nothing better.
That's awesome. And Instagram, are you on Insta?
Yeah, on Instagram and Facebook. I haven't ventured into TikTok yet. Are you doing TikTok?
I'm not big. I've got about 80,000 followers on TikTok.
Oh, it's only 80,000.
No, I mean, that's nothing on TikTok.
Oh, is it? I don't.
You know, I don't have, I'm not a TikToker. I put stuff on there, but not exclusive content. It just repurposed stuff from Facebook. So,
on Instagram, on Facebook as well. If you're in Facebook, it's you type in Sean Goodman Magician. Very creative, I know, and you'll find me, and there's lots of stuff on there, performance shots. So not performance shot in front of a video. Here we are. I don't need to worry about angles and things like that. And don't you just love the videos, particularly, sorry, laughing at this, of the headless man? Have you seen these ones, like with the coins? You can never see the person. Here we are. I can see your fingers. Yes, you're a very skillful man, but I don't see your face. That'd be really, really fun. I'd love to put some of those people in a real performing environment. So here we go. Pop you into a corporate thing. Go and entertain those people with that single coin vanish that you're selling for $20. Marvelous.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. Or the wonderful crotch shot where the camera's just at your crotch the entire time as you're doing Twisting the Aces. That's a really good one as well. Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful.
Nothing like that. Sean, this has been an incredible interview. Thank you so much for coming on the channel. I want Pleasure. Everybody to go and buy your stuff and subscribe to any social media platform that you're on. More importantly, guys, leave a comment down below. You know, it takes a lot of time to do these Talk Magics and edit them, and it takes a lot of time for the people that are coming on here for an interview to say their two pence worth, and it's always fantastic. So if you get time to just leave a comment down below, I know Sean will read the comments, and it's always really nice to leave comments that the person being interviewed can read. Outside of that, one more time, Sean, thank you so much for coming on the channel. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll see each other again in real life at some point. And whatever you bring out in the future, I'll be there first in line to buy it, because you rock.
Thank you. And the first thing I'm going to do now is go downstairs, because I've heard the postman's been, and I'm going to get forecast. So I'm looking forward to playing with that.
Well, you already know Mnemonica, so you should have no problem with it at all. So you'll be up and running immediately.
It's the routines. That's the key thing. The routines are the thing. So a lot of people, they're looking about forecast and this, that, and the other, and the teaching methods. Look, it's the routines that come with it. That's what you're paying the money for.
Exactly. Yeah, that's always been the thing with me as well. And hopefully you'll like it.
I will like it, without a doubt.
Thanks so much. Brilliant. Guys, leave a comment down below. I will be back again tomorrow with this is going up, I believe, on Tuesday. So I'm going to be back Wednesday. I'm going to be back Wednesday with a review show with my sidekick, Ryland. We'll be doing a review show. And there's also going to be a Magic Live. And then at 9 o'clock, we're also going to have a hidden gem. So check out those four videos tomorrow. Check those out. I'll be back again soon. My name's Craig. On behalf of Sean, we'll see you again.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel. Magic TV. Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV. Or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.